we can put all the specifics, you know, sent home, whatever, non-paid leave, blah, blah, blah. He's on leave in a gambling probe. What the heck is that all about, Andy? I mean, come on, man.
Well, I mean, when one of your teammates is already, I mean, there was no reason to go fishing, and then Major League Baseball went fishing when they found one of your teammates doing this, and now all of a sudden you're looking at the whole lake.
He's right? Also on leave through August 31st, according to Zach Meisel. Through August 31st. And Zach's going to be with us tomorrow, is he not, Dano? Zach from The Athletic is going to join us tomorrow. But CBS regurgitating a story from Zach Meisel in The Athletic, on paid leave through August 31st. I'm sorry. This is just this is one guy. It's like, oh, what a doof. Two guys, do you have an internal problem here? Luis Ortiz, already happened. Now Emmanuel Clase. We can sit here and speculate till the cows come home, and we're not going to do that because speculation.
We just don't know. I mean, right. We just know there's an investigation. That's
right.
It.
And he's been placed on leave.
At least, and now we're saying at least until August 31st?
That's what it says here, according to Zach, through CBS. So through August 31st. That means you do not have one of the best closers in the game for a month while you're in a pennant race. It also means this, Andy. You lost your biggest trade chip. The trade deadline is Thursday. Does this make you panic and make you go out and do something that you wouldn't have done 2 hours ago? Or does this make you stay the course? And, okay, well, Cade, you're the closer now. Or Hunter, you're the closer now. I would assume it's Cade Smith. And let's go. And maybe you look for a bat in AAA. Is Kafis ready to go? Who knows? Delauder's not. He's out 6 to 8 weeks with an injury.
Mm-hmm.
Coming back from surgery. If you're the Guardians, what do you do now?
Let me backtrack here. So if he's on paid leave, could the Guardians still trade him? By the way, if you were a team on the other side, would you take him?
No.
So
why would you? You don't know what the extent of the problem could be.
And then the next question would be, okay, let's just say he's cleared. Okay, let's go that route. Just say he is, and then CBS is saying that he is suspended at least until August 31st.
Yes.
And that's the day in any typical season, any player, according to MLB, on any typical season, any player who's on the 40-man or 60-day injured list as of 11:59 p.m. on August 31st is eligible for the postseason. Let's just say that they somehow, some way figured out their way to get back in the postseason. Would he be eligible for the postseason? I'm assuming he comes off the 31st.
Well, you're assuming that.
I'm just saying if it's through the 31st, that would mean he may not even be eligible for the postseason.
Well, if he's reinstated after the 31st, he would be. But they're investigating. What if they find things they don't like?
In a typical season, let's say they don't find anything. Any player who is on the 40, so he's still on the 40, man. And the injured list. Okay, I'm just kind of, look, I mean, this is all just kind of coming in.
Yep.
And I'm still trying to figure out. Oh, man, how does this happen? I mean, I know how.
By people making really stupid decisions.
If that's what he did.
That's how this happens.
Let's be cool about it.
If the allegations are true.
Yeah.
If they find something, let's put it that way. They obviously found something. Otherwise, you're not sending a guy home for a month in a pennant race, are you?
No.
Josh is in Edgewater. Hi, Josh. How's the beach?
Oh, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Hey there.
Thanks for taking the call. So, I'll get right to it. How much do we got to pay these guys to stop betting on themselves? I just don't understand what the temptation is, where it's coming from. Like, how much are these guys getting paid? You know, I mean, obviously it's just speculation now, but if anything comes back...
There's more than speculation because they did suspend him.
So I just don't understand.
Excuse me, send him home on non-disciplinary leave. Okay, there.
So what's the attraction to these guys? I mean, there's no
money.
Way they're getting... But how much money would you have to pay?
I don't know. That's a great question. How much money?
I'm on a men's softball league. I pay $500 to play, and I wouldn't throw one of my games for $10,000 on a league that I pay for. I just don't.
Here's the thing. You never know what's going on there. And I don't want to speculate on anything, Josh, but money is a really powerful motivator. And remember when with Clase's contract and everybody thought, boy, that's a real team-friendly contract. The word was that he wanted to take care of his family. Remember? So
yeah.
He signed because with his situation, of guaranteed money was a way to go. Well, who knows?
I mean, I can understand the excitement side of things, too. But how many people are going to these games? He's got 10,000 people going crazy for him when he walks out of that tunnel. I just don't get what the attraction is, from the betting standpoint, if you're a professional player. And that just goes for anybody. It just sucks that it's in our organization currently. But I really just don't get it from, bird's eye view.
All right, Josh, thank you very much. And it's happened twice in the organization. There's the catch. Robert's in Parma. Hello, Robert.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling.
Pitchers aside, basketball players aside, it's just too darn easy to bet. It's too easy to bet on your phone. It's too easy to have your buddy do it on their phone, whatever. It's so accessible for these guys. And I think if you trim down the accessibility, you see less of these issues in sports. You know what I mean? You open up the app on your phone and that's it.
We just don't. I'm like.
So
here's the problem I have. Like, who knows who was betting before? Who knows who was betting before? And now what happened was we opened up the window on this thing so that because that window became legalized, now they're looking, and maybe they're even looking even harder than they were before. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, but I think the opportunity to do so there as well. When were we looking at, the first pitch of the third inning before? Of what that's going to be, a ball or a strike? We weren't. We just weren't as a
thing.
I think the market has expanded.
Okay, that's fair. I'll agree with that. The market has expanded. I agree with that.
And it makes it more accessible.
I'm sure that as long as there is action in any situation over the last, since the first bet was ever made, people have always found a way to bet on something. So,
But you're
right.
It more accessible.
You're 100% right. It is way more accessible than it ever was in our lifetime. You're right. I don't disagree with that.
So, all right, take care, guys.
All right, Robert.
Thanks, Robert.
I just to point out facts here. Remember, in 2020, Clase was suspended for the whole year for PED suspension, performance-enhancing drugs. Tom's in Mentor. Hello, Tom. Welcome
to
the show.
Yeah, I listened to the last caller saying, why would these guys do something this stupid? But in theory, a lot of these guys, they come from poor backgrounds. They lived in like Dominican Republic. I don't know where Clase came from. I'm just assuming that he came probably somewhere poor or whatever.
And he's also from the Dominican.
Yeah, and their posse, they keep those guys going or whatever. They said, well, sure, I'll throw the first pitch in the top of the ninth or bottom of the ninth. It's going to be a ball. It's going to be off the plate. Call a ball and bet $500, whatever. I'm sure they don't really need the money, but I'm sure their posse needs the money, and I.
Tom, you broke up on us. Tom, you still there? All right. Tom, thank you very much. Appreciate you being with us for the moments that you were. Alex is in Norwalk. Don't forget Kevin Stefanski press conference in about 18 minutes. Hello, Alex.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Good, good.
Oh, we're depressed all of a sudden.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's this new thing. It's tough because I believe this now really takes. It's a huge mindset shift just for the front office, but I think just in the clubhouse as well. I think you're now almost forced into a selling situation because Clase is out at least till the end of August, and honestly, more than likely, it's going to be longer. But with that being said, you probably got to look to AAA to try to find a bat, and then. Try to depart from Santana as well. I think that should have been done personally because I think he's blocking Manzardo, but that's besides the point. This news is just extremely troubling to say the least. Obviously they're investigating it. There's no confirmation of anything, but
There's enough to send a guy home for a month, right, Alex?
Right, precisely. I mean, if there's enough to do that, then
in season,
you know, there's clearly something going on.
Yep.
Which is very unfortunate, especially with the season Class A's had. I know he started out rough, but man, he's really starting to look good. I mean, obviously not. I mean, yesterday was an exception, but other than that, he was looking good. And it's tough because this team was really starting to, you know, turn it on and be really trying to make a push here. But without the, you know, one of the best closers in the game, if not the best closer in the game, it's going to be very difficult.
Alex, thank you very much. And see, that's, for instance, just an announcement like this and a discipline like this made us think, because we all looked at each other and went, wow, he sure had a terrible beginning of the season, didn't he? And that's not fair. But immediately when you hear this, you think, well, wait a minute, is that what was going on? Just received the text from a buddy. Is this tied to the Ortiz thing? You would think so, wouldn't you?
I would think so. If they were investigating,
it's too weird that two guys from the same team who play the same position end up having the same disciplinary action in the same season. In season. Isn't that weird? I don't believe in weird, and I don't believe in coincidence. Weird, yes. Coincidence, no. I would doubt it's a coincidence.
The 2025 Guardians, whatever happened there? Oh boy. How you doing?
What's going on, Kenny?
So I didn't know where to begin. I didn't know where to finish yesterday. It's just it hits you dead on. Yesterday afternoon, you know, I'm getting in the rigmarole of Gardo's, and we're talking about, hey, you know, do they have a chance in the Central? And then this Emmanuel Classe stuff happens, and I go, I can't believe what I'm reading. I can't believe it's going on. And then, you know, there's other things going on with this team about trades, and Ken Rosenthal has a report, and it's just a terrible, terrible, terrible situation here. So Emmanuel Classe has been placed on non-disciplinary paid leave per an agreement with the Players Association. This is a quote from Bart Swain of the Guardians. We have been informed that no additional players or club personnel are expected to be impacted. The Guardians are not permitted to comment further at this time and will respect the league's confidential investigative process as we continue to fully cooperate. Well, they did comment a little bit further there, as Chris Antonetti and Stephen Vogt certainly answered about these sort of things, as you heard there in the open. Jeff Passan issued a report about it. Here's Jeff Passan, ESPN.
He was placed on non-disciplinary paid leave today after he was caught up in the sports betting investigation Major League Baseball is doing. On July 3rd, his teammate Luis Ortiz was put on non-disciplinary paid leave as well after gambling operators found that there was unusual betting activity on two pitches he had thrown, one June 15th and June 27th, rather. Pitches that there was unusual activity that he was going to throw a ball. Both of those pitches were out of the strike zone. It's unclear at this point what the ties with Emmanuel Classe and the investigation are, but the Guardians put out a statement that said they have no thought that there are going to be other players who are going to be tied up in this.
Well, I certainly hope not. I mean, this is starting to turn into something that looks like the Black Sox scandal of 1919, for crying out loud. It's just not in the World Series. But my God, reaction is shock. What?
Yeah, well, I'm not shocked. I'm not shocked that...
I don't know how you're not shocked.
Two pitches from one player, and obviously we don't know the extent of the Class A stuff. Like, I always expected some players to be doing this. Did you not? With a million different bets that you can make on a game. We saw this in basketball. We've seen a few players that have been roped into it. But you brought up the Black Sox scandal. I'm on ESPN.com. It's not one of the top 15 stories.
Well, I thought the first thought you would have would be something that turns into like, my God, how many guys are doing this? And then they have their report there that says that there's nobody else that's included in this, which makes you feel a little bit better about it. I mean, I had several thoughts go right into my mind. I plan on getting them out here over the next 4 hours, if that's okay. Yeah. I'm just telling you my initial reaction to it.
I didn't think he'd get mad at me. I mean, you always try to stick it to me,
and here we are.
I just was commenting. So I did wonder how big of a deal this was, because the first one, when we hear two pitches, like there was a regular betting for two pitches, right?
This is for Luis Ortiz.
Yes, this is for Ortiz. And then you hear that, and you know, a part of me is inclined to say, just like in the NBA thing, when it was Malik Beasley and I see highlights of him playing really hard in the final 10 seconds of a blowout, I'm like, oh, when I bet on things, if I'm betting on things, I have to know that it can be manipulated by athletes doing this. Where this one, Kenny, is definitely a bigger deal. This is a closer coming in at the end of a game that can definitely change whether or not can impact the outcome of a game, just based on, especially, man, come playoff time, when we say every pitch is life or death. If you get behind the hitters, that's the end. That could be the end. That could be the end of your team's game. That could be the end of the playoff.
Yeah.
So that's where it absolutely could be a huge deal. We just don't know the extent. Right now, I'm guessing that they haven't. I think we would have already heard if it were playoff games or anything like that. So far, we don't know. We don't know the extent of this. We don't know if all of a sudden where it becomes, my God, the Black Sox scandal is if we've got the entire rotation or the entire battery or the entire like that's when it gets enormous. It's just far too early to tell. Where right now, all my buddies are just joking about it. There were jokes. And then last night during the Rockies game, there were jokes when, you know, Tyler Freeman was coming through late in that game. Like,
who was the one joking?
Just my text threads. My text threads. They didn't seem to be outraged. It sounded for a second
like the broadcast was joking. No. I'd be very surprised about that.
Like, they didn't seem to be outraged. It was more like, hey, this is this season. Now we're looking back, looking at everything, knowing that it probably isn't every situation. It's not like everything's been manipulated. It's just hard to know until the investigation in Major League Baseball gives us a little more accurate information
than
what was flown around the internet last night.
Exactly. So we don't have a lot of information right now. So I think a lot of people go to the absolute worst case scenario. So that's why I thought, I go, well, if it's Emmanuel Clase, how many other pitchers could possibly be involved in this? And then, of course, the speculation started. Well, he was terrible in the postseason last year. Was there something in the postseason last year where he might have been throwing games allegedly or something like that?
The guy was unhittable all season, then gave up 8 earned runs in 8 innings. And 4 of his appearances in the playoffs, 4 of 7.
I don't know, the way he reacted on social media would tell me that he was not acting as if he was okay or just trying to be quiet with giving up these, getting shelled in the postseason. Yes, Owen?
Do your text friends, your betting friends, do they care about the Guardians or do they only care about sports bets?
They care about sports bets.
Yeah, both. I would say both.
Because the people like, I know that care about the fans. Guardians, the guys that are standing with me in the outfield every night that are paying, I know it's only $50 a month, but that's a lot to us.
Yeah, right? They're upset.
I'm pretty pissed off about the whole deal. But my family's pretty pissed off about the whole deal. My kids are pretty pissed off about the whole deal.
So what did they say? That's interesting to me because it seems like most Guardians fans have just been mad the whole year.
It felt like we're finally turning a corner on things. The schedule's lining up for us. We got the deadline coming up on Thursday. And now you throw this in the face and it's like, well, there goes the season.
Well, there is a weird, creepy, logical explanation to some of this, which I'll get to because you're talking about speculation that's floating around the internet. So I'm hesitant to even share some of the crazy stuff that's been going around. I mean, you got this Hector Gomez guy who covers Major League Baseball, and he's saying that more people could have been involved, and those are unsubstantiated reports. And this is a guy who has a very large following, a director of communications in Major League Baseball.
100,000 followers.
I can't, but I'm looking at something that's unsubstantiated, so I'm not going to really touch it on that. I'm going to go by what the statement said. Major League Baseball told the Guardians there, if something more comes on it, then fine. I'll hammer the Guardians even more because I'm going to say, you told us all that more people weren't going to be involved, and here we got more people involved. So they better have their ducks in an order over at the corner of Carnegie in Ontario. But I think for a general fan, I mean, if you got buddies who are just gambling on baseball, I mean, I can't help it that degenerates are going to make jokes about it during the regular season. But Owen's exactly right. You have a fan base that is either A, they aren't the biggest baseball fans in the world, and this is something to do between basketball season and the NFL, and they're not real big fans anyway, and it just gives them more of a reason to go after the Dolans because there's been a million Dolans jokes that have been thrown out there here over the last 18 hours. The other part of it is that they're hardcore fans and they want the team to win, and you're coming off an ALCS appearance, and now we have this going on where now these guys might not even be to it, and you don't even know the original extent of everything that goes on. Oh, and by the way, the guy who's supposed to replace him that people did want to replace him with at the beginning of the season got blown up again last night.
Yeah.
In a safe situation.
And not only that, it was a former Guardians player that you traded for.
300 that played right field, and we can't get one of those to save our lives right now.
That adds the insult to injury. So Chris Antonetti did speak, even though they said they'd have no further comment. Chris Antonetti did speak. There wasn't much he could really say. He does say they hope to get answers before the end of next month.
What I know is that the suspensions are in place through August 31st. And then we'll have to see where things are at that point. Obviously, for everyone, I think we'd prefer to have clarity sooner rather than later. But I recognize it's a complicated issue, and Major League Baseball has a number of steps they need to work through to complete that investigation.
Well, you can't call them suspensions, can you? It's non-disciplinary paid leave. Now, that's a long way to say suspension, but
baseball absolutely needs to clarify as much as possible. So I believe Antonetti there. Like, I think they're frustrated because I think he's feeling the pressure. Owen, I imagine they got some calls last night. I imagine, you know, the ticket office also got some calls. I imagine they've been feeling that heat from people that want to know, is any of this real? Like, and again, I'm saying, like, the stuff that I've seen online, and it's a lot of first pitches. Here's a montage of first pitches, even though in this case, we don't know what the prop bets were. We don't know what has actually been gambled on and where the irregularities, because all of these kind of start where irregularities begin. That's how the NBA, at least, it worked. And that's how it was triggered, you know, in the first scenario. So you imagine that a bunch of bets came in, and these guys all think, and again, innocent until proven guilty. So I can't speak for Class A, but these guys all think they can get away with it. It's almost like baseball and basketball and the NFL have to continually tell these guys, you will get caught. It's not a question of, hey, can you be smart enough to game the system? Like, you're going to get caught. Because if anybody's actually making money on any of this, it's going to trigger all sorts of alarms for the sports books, who in turn will trigger the leagues, and then will be investigated, and it's a federal crime. So it can be a pretty big deal.
It's made it worse where Chris Antonetti was asked about the impact of the trade deadline approaching.
It's a lot of information to process. You know, I think what we know is that, you know, two very good pitchers aren't going to be available to pitch for us, you know, in the near term. And so we have to assess how that impacts our, you know, our thinking on things.
Yeah, it makes it worse because it seems almost that some people are thinking that the Guardians could raise the white flag on the season. Here, Ken Rosenthal of the New York Times and The Athletic. This was at 12:31 overnight. So you're going to hear this first in the city of Cleveland because we're local here. That he is hearing, so quote, I'm hearing from Major League sources with less than three full days left to the conclusion of Major League trade. The MLB trade deadline at 6 on Thursday, the loss of Emmanuel Clase as part of Major League Baseball investigation, sports betting, did not simply deprive the Guardians of their top chip. It ended any chance of the Guardians becoming a buyer and likely increased the possibility of the team trading right-hander Shane Bieber and perhaps left fielder Stephen Kwan. Now, when it comes to Shane Bieber, I raise my arms. I don't know what type of pitcher you're going to get back. Let's be serious. When it comes to Stephen Kwan, that's going to be a big nasty thing that a lot of people ain't going to be very happy about. And it again, it adds more fuel to the fire of what's going on. Now, again, I think when you and your I know you don't gamble, but your buddies who gamble, they don't care about any of this because, you know, they're gambling sickos, whatever. But I think to a Guardians fan, I mean, you're sick to your stomach. You're trying to talk yourself into thinking that they got a chance to even make the postseason here. And we've been holding on to this 30th ranked strength of schedule here. You come back from the All-Star break. You play good baseball right before the All-Star break. You come back from the All-Star break. You win two series. And then this goes on, and it's just one bleep storm after another.
The year's just been a mess. Let's be honest. They've had three good weeks of baseball throughout the entire season. That's it. And they're under 500. There's so many teams, you know, that they would have to jump over to get to the postseason. You know, let's face it. I mean, what was it? 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I was calling it a lost season. We were pretty much kind of operating under the assumption that they were not going anywhere. And even with their surge, you know, yeah, we started to create a runway for given the schedule, given the pitching.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, I mean, there's been nothing special about this team. There's been nothing that made you think this team, you know, had the capacity to go on a run. And now you add this in the clubhouse.
There just better not be anybody else.
And I imagine, you know, there's going to be more reporting done, and there's going to be a lot of questions about, well, it happens to be two players on the same team, happens to be two pitchers on the same team. Who knows what? Let's start asking everybody. Let's talk to clubhouse attendants. Let's talk to everybody. Even if it was two lone actors, you know, operating on their own. You just know how people in today's conspiracy theory ridden world, where it dominates and populates every story and everything online, you know that people are just not going to believe it, right? They're just going to assume everybody's in on it. Everybody's in on it. I saw people going after Vogt. I saw people going after Dolan yesterday as if this was an orchestrated attempt.
Yeah, there was that.
And it's like, wait, so you think the manager is either...
Not me.
Either he knows about it and doesn't say anything, or he can't stop people from gambling. Like, I don't know how you could go after the manager based on anything we know just right now.
Here's Vogt on the situation.
It stinks. It hurts. Not something we saw coming, not something that we anticipate. It's okay to be upset. It's okay to be hurting, but we're in this together. It's just another reminder that this game is fragile. This game is special, and it's just a reminder of we have to do this together. We're going to get through it, but it's going to be hard.
Unless I know that Vogt was working on some parlay with him, yeah. I'm not going to put it on Steven Vogt, the grown man. He ain't no high school baseball coach here. But I do want to know from anybody, and it's been a tough season as it is, could this scandal... could it affect how you feel about the Cleveland Guardians?
MJ Emerson had an injury today. We'll talk about how that relates to the Browns in a second. Dylan Gabriel doing his best Forrest Gump impression in front of us. Hey. I was running. He is just running full-out sprints right now.
Hey, listen, he's getting like, I mean, it's goal line to goal line, bro.
What is happening? Like, it's like it's a million degrees out. He's just running full-on sprints.
Well,
I just
see Daryl said that he threw a
pick. He got picked. So he got picked in the red zone to end his two-minute drill. And I guess maybe he's punishing himself.
Oh, yeah, that's what's happening.
Is that what it is?
Shame.
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 It's his version of a shame bush. He's got to do some sprints instead.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, it's not Game of Thrones shame, but, yeah. You know.
Well, nothing's really Game of Thrones shame.
I mean, he's moving. Listen, I saw Patrick Mahomes doing that.
He's running.
Yeah.
Like you saw Mahomes do this, too?
Like in the quarterback little documentary?
Oh, yeah.
He was running and weaving and doing things like that.
That's because radio hosts called him fat is why that was. He was like, I just need to do some extra conditioning.
He was like, I'm going to work my way. But he's the only quarterback I know works his way into shape during the season.
Can I say this about Dylan Gabriel?
Go ahead.
Low-key fast.
No, listen, hold on. Let me.
I thought he was. I didn't know he was this fast.
Hold on. So let me throw this. I was out here on Thursday, right?
Yeah.
And the first thing I said was, "Hey man," I turned to Jason Lloyd. I tapped him on the shoulder. I said, "Hey, listen. Hey man, Dylan Gabriel got a little arm on him, huh?"
Well, so he's always had the velocity. Like we've always, because he threw it like 70 miles per hour at the combine. Like we knew he could throw it. I think that's a good point though. I think it's interesting when you see it in person. It definitely is. It fires off a little bit.
Yeah, it hit a little different. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? When you see it, that's why I be trying.
But that's the thing with Dylan Gabriel though. It's never been about whether or not he could actually play the game. It's whether or not he could play the game being a munchkin. You know, like the thing with Dylan was, could he play the game at 5'8"? Like, because in college all he did was make passes.
Yeah,
all he's done is make completions. I've never had a problem with his actual game. Again, every level he's ever been at, he's performed to a high degree. Yeah. I just have a problem with the fact that I don't know that he can see over the offensive line.
I think my assessment was that when he's throwing outs and slants with clean pockets and a little bit of real estate in front of him,
yeah,
he's highly accurate. He has velocity on the ball, looks good. The issue is in confined spaces with a rush in his face, it's a little different.
Yeah.
He now has to find those windows, and it don't really help that much if your left tackle standing right in front of you is 6'8". So now you definitely got to find a couple extra windows, especially if the pressure is there. So, you know, that's the thing that will be the key for him to figure out what he was going to do. But that's one thing about coming to practice. You ask me, man, you just come to practice? And I say, yeah, because...
Yeah, well, I mean, because I've known you for a million years, and I've never known you just to come to practice, but now you're here every day.
Yeah, I just was like, I got... Well, here's the thing, too. When you see it, because I'm like you. I heard you on the way in. I'm along the lines of I'm an individual that I would like to have a lottery ticket. I want to see which one of these quarterbacks can possibly be something because I know that the greatest stimulus package in the world is actually having first-round picks that you don't have to spend on quarterbacks.
Exactly. You can spend it on skill position players. Yeah. You can get whatever your heart desires.
It's like going to the grocery store and not being hungry.
And imagine having the quarterback situation figured out, and then you got two of those to spend next year.
Man, so I said, let me come down here and look. I got to see for myself. Because, and you know, at the time, you know, Shador wasn't getting any first team reps.
Well, we're going to get in a lot of Shador in the 4 o'clock hour as well. So don't worry. We're going to have a lot of room for Shador.
So, but I will say, so I had to come down and take a look at it. And I, you know, I was saying on UCSS earlier today.
Yeah.
I said, you know, you could have, we heard Jimmy Haslam speak. You can have all the plans in the world. But when you get out here and practice and life starts happening.
What's your of mice and men quote?
The best laid plans of mice and men often go awry.
There we go.
Now, look, man, you got the best plans in the world. But when you get here and people start moving around and large human beings start tackling people, people seem to start dropping a little bit.
So. Well, and so that's the interesting thing here, G. Like, so Kenny Pickett got injured, and again, he was running 80 yards, kind of like doing what Dylan Gabriel was doing right there. Mm-hmm. But he was basically just celebrating. That's not, like, I can't put that on a hard practice or this one not being Camp Cupcake or anything like that. But then you have the MJ Emerson injury, and we're 2 weeks into this thing, and you have what was potentially your day one starting quarterback, and then your second best corner on the team that was supposed to have a big bounce back season, and all of a sudden, players are dropping like flies. So I do wonder if this will change what the Browns do moving forward, because they've gotten a lot of praise. And I don't know, I haven't been in every practice. It's the first practice I've been at. But, like, have you seen on Saturday and then on Monday and really last Friday, did you see it being much different than what it was last year? Because last year was a joke, in my opinion. Like, I watched those practices. I was out here doing shows. Last year was an absolute joke when it came to toughness and physicality. But did they course correct a little bit too much?
I went down, and I went – the first thing I wanted to see was I wanted to go down – and I got here, and I watched the offensive line. And the offensive line was doing pre-practice. Now, pre-practice, for those that don't know, is, practice starts at, say, 2. Mm-hmm. But we all know at 1:30, we're out there getting that pre-work in. Mm-hmm. And that's where you can get a lot of extra work. And they were out there drilling power steps, zone steps, gap schemes. I'm saying, wow, I haven't seen this. Guys are talking, really, really working on hand placement. And I knew it was different then because – last year, it was based on, hey, let's get everybody to the finish line. Let's get everybody ready to go so we don't gotta, you know. We want to get everybody whole by the first game. And then they realized that by the time they got to the Dallas Cowboys game, they said, oh, this is the second week of training camp for these guys when we playing real games.
Yeah, and they got just absolutely destroyed by what turned out to be a pretty bad Cowboys team.
Bad. So that's how bad it was when you get smoked by them and then they come out and look bad. It just goes to show you the difference in mentality.
It almost felt like last year, and we saw this in a couple different spots across the NFL, but it kind of felt like last year they were just like, well, we'll just, everyone's in agreement, we'll take the first 4 weeks kind of easy. And we'll just kind of like ease our way into the season, and we'll just kind of, it's 17 games now, not 16, so we got to take it a little bit differently. And the Browns just didn't get the memo that not every team was doing that, you know? And a team like the Cowboys came out and just punched them in the face. And it's different this offseason. Have you noticed that? Like, the Bengals, Browns play the Bengals week one. What has been the messaging out of Cincinnati in that camp? It has been, we are going to play harder, we're going to play more physical, and we're going to have a tough camp. We're going to do things differently so that week one, we look better. Now, I'd argue in years past, they look bad because Zach Taylor decided that running the ball was the best option when Joe Burrow's his quarterback, but that's neither here nor there. They're taking these things just a little bit different, and that's why I find it so interesting. Like, after seeing the MJ Emerson injury today, do they then go back to the other direction and go back to what it was last year, or do they maintain, pedal to the metal, let's keep this thing hard, let's keep these practices hard?
I think they stay with the hard practices. Go out, you know, Instagram, as I'm watching, there's a nice little soundbite of Kevin Stefanski when they pull it up. He says, listen, guys, it was hot out here today. It's going to be hot out here tomorrow. There's only one way to get your body ready, and that's to train hard and to practice hard. So, you know, there will be casualties. That's part of, you know, you're going to get some friendly fire. You're going to get some casualties. But here's the thing. If he wants to go back to what he was and the identity, see, sometimes you got to break it down. What was your identity? People are saying, hey, you know, we want to go back to that old school Kevin Stefanski. And I'm like, well, do you remember what that was? That was play action, boots, screens, yeah, and prime Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt running downhill. I don't see Kareem Hunt. I don't see Nick Chubb. Quinshon Judkins is not signed. Nick Chubb is playing for the Houston Texans. So my thing
is, apparently looks pretty bad too, by the way.
Who was that?
Nick Chubb.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Listen, I didn't hear you. So
I still have friends in Houston, mm-hmm, and I've talked to a couple of them, and they said, like, the ones that are there at the camp every day, mm-hmm, and they made the suggestion that Nick Chubb doesn't look like it looks like a very bad signing at this point.
Oh, okay.
Like, it looks awful.
We'll see.
We know why the Browns didn't re-sign him now.
Well, Joe Mixon is out, I believe, until the preseason, mm-hmm, starts. So we'll see how many carries Nick Chubb gets. But here's the thing. I think a lot of people were willing to say, okay, well, if Nick Chubb is not going to be your third, if he's not going to be in the mix and you drafted two running backs, okay, we get it. But one of them running backs, we don't even know going to play. So what are we going to hang our hat on in terms of the running game? It's still Jerome Ford. It's still Pierre Strong.
Right.
And Dylan Sampson. Like, so, you know, be careful what you ask for. But to get the offensive line ready to go in order to run that play style, they got to give them reps. They got to do it. So we'll see how it works.
All right. 216-474-0092 at GBush91 at JP. You know, that's how you find us on Twitter. Twitter reactions brought to you by our friends at Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Coach Riz joining us in about a half hour or so. We'll get back to the Brownies at that point. Big Shador Sanders 420, 440 segment as well. We'll get a lot of those type of conversations. And it really just kind of get us ramped up. I feel like both me and you and Spencer, who's sitting right here as well, we all feel very fondly of Shador. We're, yeah, like the three Shador people on the station. We can, yeah, throw Earl in the mix as well.
The coalition.
And so we'll have a heavy, let's just love on Shador 420, 440 type segment. But I think there's some truth and some conversations that we have to have around Shador. So we'll do that in the 4 o'clock hour. But I want to talk with you guys about what's going on with Emmanuel Clase, because I didn't get a chance to do any of this yesterday. I just got back from Boston. And so Nick was in yesterday with Chris, with Fedor, and so now this is my first crack at it. But we've seen more and more parts of the story as well. Ken Rosenthal tweeting out last night about what this could mean for the deadline. We'll get to that side of things. But it's interesting. Last time me and you hosted together, yep, it was the day that Ortiz got cracked, yep, and we went through that whole entire saga, down to the amount of states. There was three different states that bets were placed, and it was interesting because I remember kind of laying down the foundation for it and explaining just how stupid it is that any player would be guilty of such a thing, mm-hmm, because, listen, I got a buddy of mine who always says, I don't go gambling, I go winning, okay? And so, like, so I got to do this. I got to do this in two different spades here, right? This isn't gambling the way that people are talking about it being gambling, and it's a problem I have with the whole entire discussion, okay, to begin with. So we'll unpack this as we go, okay, here, okay? This is closer to, I don't go gambling, I go winning. This isn't a bet as to whether or not they will win the outcome. When Pete Rose was betting in the 70s, okay, he still had to wonder to himself, I'm only one guy. I can only manipulate the game so much. I might end up on the losing end of this. When Ohtani's interpreter was losing millions of dollars, it's not because he was going winning. It's because he was going gambling and being awful at it. The difference here between what Ortiz is accused of and what Clase is accused of, that's not gambling. That's them winning. That's them pocketing money, and that's them figuring out the outcomes. Now, Guardians may have known something was coming. They're not idiots. Vogt said in the piece that he didn't know exactly what was coming, but they weren't born yesterday, okay? They just weren't. The reality is, they thought to themselves, he might be under investigation for this. We're still going to put him out on the field because we know he's impacting the game in such a little minuscule way, and we're still getting the outcomes that we want out of him. Like, at this point, yeah, you can label it gambling, but this isn't gambling to me. This is a way of just pocketing extra money, even though the infractions are just as serious as gambling, and the MLB has to treat it just as serious as gambling. When you do one pitch bets for $40,000, $30,000, like, gee, you're not gambling on the outcome of the game.
That's free money.
That's just free money. You're just, you're cashing. You're not losing that bet.
It's I'll be fascinated to see when they really break it down, because you know they got a situation where they're like, okay, we can't come out with nothing. We ain't gonna say nothing. But I want to know what tipped it off. Like, obviously, if you're betting pitch to pitch, like.
Well, so it's got to be the large sums of money that were placed on it. That was the tip-off. So, like, in the Ortiz instance, we never found out what the amount was, but reasonable minds would suggest that if it was a $10,000 bet on one pitch to start off an inning, that's going to raise a red flag. Like, you don't need a system to tell you something's wrong here. Anyone that's been in Vegas for any amount of time will tell you something's not right here.
And you know, the crazy part about it is, I always tell people like this, man, try to go wire to over $10,000. Flagged.
Right?
Go to an airport and have 10,000 cash. Flagged.
Can't do it.
You can't do it. Like, so for you to believe that they're not watching this, and this is digital, there's a digital footprint on everything you're doing. And it's very easy to go back. And the crazy part about it is when they're doing investigations and they come get your hard drives, or they come get them cell phones.
Uh-huh.
It's like, okay, at that point, they're watching you. And let me ask you this.
Yeah.
We can't prove it, but do you think the two actions are connected?
Yeah, I don't know how it couldn't be. Like Ortiz or Clase, we don't know which one would have been the starter here, but there's no way that the two of them are just lone wolves on this.
Right. Like,
there's got to be, and I'm doing a lot of guesstimating. Whether or not we'll ever have it proven or not is another thing, and you can just take the Hector Gomez tweets and just shove it up where the sun doesn't shine. I don't care about him. Mm-hmm. But, like, just think about the idea that Ortiz would look at this as free money, Clase would look at it as free money, and that everybody else in the room would just say no. Like, it starts and stops at two people. I just don't buy it. Not if they actually thought they had some sort of syndicate and some sort of way of actually doing this. It's just whether or not baseball can prove it is what I'm trying to get to.
And here's the thing. I don't think that maybe they didn't think about it. Even if, obviously, they're not dumb enough to go up and say, here, I'm going to put it where it was easily traceable back to me. But it's still easily traceable back to, like, whoever it is, right? Like, if you are in specific cities and they can see a pattern of, hey, these guys are betting 10,000, 20,000 on right. one pitch, let's go and see
You know who those guys are. So, like, for instance, I have a buddy of mine, and I was on his bachelor party. He was in my wedding. He's one of my he's a good friend of mine, right? Mm-hmm. And he works at one of the gambling companies, okay? Mm-hmm. And so I'm at his bachelor party. We're in Vegas all together. And one of the guys that was on this Vegas trip with him, a buddy of his, was just one of the guys that ends up, he's a client of his, and they just ended up becoming buddies. But the client of his is there for a reason. It's because he bets massive amount of dollars. He's very, very wealthy, very well off. And I'm sitting there and I'm talking to this guy, and we're eating steak, just having a dinner and everything like that. And the guy is telling me how he's betting $10,000 on spring training baseball games. Like, spring training baseball was going on, and he's betting $10,000 a game, and he's moving the lines on spring training. But it's like, well, who's he hanging out with in this setting? He's right. hanging out with the guy that is his connection to the gambling app that he uses. Like, not only did they know each other, they became good friends. That's how well they know each other, because, like, this is how this works. If you're in that space and you're gambling that amount of money, the casinos know who you are. Yeah. The gambling companies know who they know who you are. They know everything about you. So if you randomly pop up and through three different states you're betting on Guardians first pitches, it's going to signal some alarms. Like, people are going to be like, where did this come from? Who is this guy? And what do we know about him? And luckily for at least baseball didn't just sleep on some of the warning signs. How obvious the warning signs were is what I'm interested in, though. 216-474-0092. I have one theory that connects Ortiz and Clase together that nobody's thought of. I got one. I'll tell that to you guys in 5 minutes. We'll get to Coach Riz coming up in about 20 minutes as well. It's Jonathan Pedel and Garrett Bush, Afternoon Drive in Berea, right here on The Fan.
The two moves, while the Guardians sent Shane Bieber, was coming back from rehab, he ends up going to Toronto for Cal Stevens. And then they also sent reliever Paul Sewald to Detroit for future consideration. So that is the two moves that the Guardians have made so far today. They have the day off. Let's get more information from a man in the know, fresh off a trip to Cooperstown. He's a super friend of the show from MLB.com. Com. You know him and love him as Anthony Castrovince, and he's on the fan hotline right now. Anthony, my friend, how are you?
I'm great. It's a great day to be a Guardians fan, isn't it?
I don't know. Hell. Is it? You tell me. I'm very, like, I think if they trade Stephen Kwan, the fans are not going to be happy.
Yeah. No, I don't blame them one bit. It's just been a very heavy season, right? So everything's just felt heavy this year.
Yeah.
They've struggled to really piece things together in the win column. It's amazing they're 500 in spite of the way a lot of things have gone. But, they just haven't had that edge to them. And then, you know, you kind of get a gambling scandal blows up in your face. And next thing you know, here you are at the trade deadline where I don't know if what we've seen is the extent of things or if there's still another big one coming. I think we all know, like you just said, I mean, how that would be perceived by the fan base, that would be pretty rough. But so has this whole week has been rough for them.
True.
Anthony, if you have to run, we understand. Trade deadline coming up in less than 5 hours. With that said, Mason Miller, closer, gets traded from the Athletics to the Padres. Johan Duran, closer, goes from the Twins to the Phillies. And Emmanuel Clase is sitting at home right now and can't play until August 31st. You think Clase would have been one of those guys?
I really do. I think they've kind of wavered back and forth, in recent weeks. And just with the light schedule in the second half, you wondered how they respond to that. But just generally speaking, I think it was an environment where there's so many teams hungry for help in that area. And I just think it was a chance for them to be opportunistic. But obviously that goes out the window now.
All right, let's get into the Guardians. At Bieber to Toronto. Your thoughts on that as the Guardians front office deals with their old friends in Toronto?
Yeah, it's kind of amusing how, they extend Andrés Giménez, Miles Straw. They do this deal with Bieber, which at the time people were justifiably excited about, to bring him back in the fold when that didn't seem possible prior to his injury. But and all those guys end up shipped off to Canada. So
Guardians North, right? Isn't that
Guardians North?
That's what the T-shirt could say.
Obviously, a great working relationship between those two front offices, and the Blue Jays are in a position where they can. It's a calculated gamble on Bieber, where you're going to owe him about, I think it's around $6 or $7 million for the remainder of this year if you factor in the buyout for next year. But he's got that player option for $16 million, which really kind of hung over the Guardians' head. So it made sense to just, move that money first and foremost. He hasn't obviously thrown a pitch for them this year, but I like it for the Blue Jays. I love Shane Bieber. Great guy, hard worker, and I really root for good things for him in his return from surgery here. It's obviously been a painstaking process, and he's evidence that, it's not always as smooth as you want or think it might be. But if he can deliver them some good innings down the stretch, I really like that a lot on a team that has definitely overshot expectations in a big way this year.
Anthony, if he's going to pick up that option, don't you think they would have kept him?
I don't know. I mean, this is what hangs in the air with the Luis Ortiz / Emmanuel Clase situation, unfortunate as it is. It really changes your construction for next year, where those guys were obviously, if you were going to keep Clase past the trade deadline, and again, who knows, it's to lose two huge building blocks on your pitching staff like that, affordable pieces at that, really changes the way you construct your club for next year. And $16 million for Shane Bieber, who, again, we don't know what the stuff is going to be. We don't know what the success is going to be. I think it made all the sense in the world for them to move him now and to not have, that financial reality kind of hanging in the air on a team that doesn't have a lot of financial resources at its disposal, for a front office that doesn't have a lot of financial resources at its disposal. Do you want to have the possibility of, committing $16 million to Shane Bieber, with all that missed time? Again, I love the guy, and I think he'll come out, on a good side of this, but you can't, it's not my money to play with. And so I just think that's a big commitment, with so much uncertainty now for 2026, given what has just happened.
Interesting. Why would you trade Stephen Kwan Is it because you're hoping to get overwhelmed with an offer since there are not a ton of bats out there available?
Right.
Are you afraid of what might be coming down the road in free agency with him? Well, the idea of why you trade one of two or three guys who can actually hit for you is the puzzling aspect here.
Right, and it goes back to what I just said. I mean, I think that what happened with, you know, completely having your 2026 plans dramatically altered, then you start to go down the road of, okay, what is this? Are we going to go super young and try to build things up again? That's a real possibility. I mean, the other possibility is just you figure something out with Stephen Kwan. I mean, they certainly had extension talks in the past, and maybe here, sometimes deadlines spur action in that regard as well. You know, so maybe you throw a bunch of money at Stephen Kwan and get him to stick around. I don't know, but if that's not going to happen, and they have a better sense of that than I do, as far as, you know, where those conversations, you know, what the holdup is, how far apart they are, all that, you know, maybe you start to get realistic about your future and how things look for 2026, 2027, which is the years you have control of Stephen Kwan, and looking at a trade market that is super light on bats. I mean, super, super, super light. So, if you can get a haul that includes, you know, a couple top 100 prospects, a higher end, you know, within that top 100, you know, within that, I mean, I think you got to think long and hard about that, just given what has just transpired in the past, you know, in the past few weeks where again, I mean, crucial pieces of, you know, crucial building blocks of your pitching staff have just been taken away from you. And so, you know, how deep that goes, I don't know, because this is the front office that's very reluctant to do a rebuild. They don't want to turn off the fan base, you know, at large. And look where it's gotten them. You know, they've been very smart, generally speaking, about moving guys at the right time. You know, they've certainly traded away a lot of talent, but they've been pretty diligent about, you know, doing it the right time, not rushing the process, sticking to their demands with other teams. And that's not going to change, in light of what's happened this week. I mean, they have a high price on Stephen Kwan. I'm sure they'll maintain that price. And if they don't get it, they won't move him. But if they do move him, it will be because A, the market just presented an opportunity that was too good to pass up. And B, you have to be honest with yourself about what does 2026 look like? You know, and it could look a lot younger than they had envisioned earlier.
Mm. Anthony Castrovince, MLB.com, joining us on the fan hotline. I want to go back for one second because Jeff and I talked about this as far as Bieber was concerned. How do you think that we all knew Bieber was going to be out for a good portion of this season, right? How did he end up getting the option on the second year?
Well, oftentimes that is part of those deals where it just is, you know, for the player's benefit, you know, where there's just so much unknown in the air. And Shane Bieber, let's face it, Shane Bieber had bad timing when it comes to the injury. You know, he missed out on a very lucrative opportunity. And there were probably more lucrative opportunities for him for the 1 year for 2025. Mm-hmm. But he did value, you know, the training staff here, the continuity that comes with that. And then, yeah, you put it in his hands, you know, where if things do go off the rails, if he can't come back from this thing, or if he comes back a very much lesser version of himself, at least he had that financial security for that second year. So yeah, it was kind of like, I don't know how to phrase this. It's not like he's doing them a favor, re-signing with them. I mean, both sides took on risk with that deal, but he did probably go below market to come back to Cleveland because of the continuity. And they do him the solid with the player
the
option. But,
oh, that makes
and
sense.
And I don't even know what it's still as of, you know, here we are July 31st. There's not a ton of season left, but there's still enough season left where who knows what happens with that player option. You know, if he comes back strong and he pitches now for a contender and pitches well and pitches in the postseason well, I mean, boom, you know, so much for the player option. He can probably do a lot better. So it'll be fascinating to see him in the next couple months, and I'll be rooting for him hard.
Reliever Paul Sewall goes to Detroit for a player to be named later or money, right?
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable with trading with Detroit. Yeah, you got to help me on this one.
Oh,
or unless they think,
I mean,
that Sewald, it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, it's Paul Sewald in a not good year, veteran guy, gets to go pitch for a contender. You know, they add some veteran presence to their bullpen. No big deal. You know, that's kind of we're kind of getting away from that mindset anyway, of trading with the division. I think it's a little different for, like, if you were to trade Stephen Kwan to the Tigers, you know, and then face him, you know, whatever it is, 15 times a year for the next couple of years.
It's not 17 anymore, thank goodness.
I know, I'm always forgetting the math now. But, you know, that's probably different. But still, generally speaking, I mean, everybody's competing with everyone in the league now with three wild card spots. I mean, so if you're going to go down that road, you know, it's dangerous to trade with anybody in your league.
In the AL,
so, yeah. So you see more of those intra-division deals. You don't see the reluctance to do that the way you once did. And yeah, Paul Sewald for the next couple of months where, you know, they're not really competing with the Tigers for the division at this point. And again, that's a good dude. I hope he, you know, I hope he puts it together for them in the last couple of months here.
Anthony Castrovince joining us, MLB.com. Are you hearing anything about the situations with Emmanuel Clase and Luis Ortiz? And is there any way they're on the field this year?
Well, I'll just say that, you know, if it gets to this point, it's not good, generally speaking, like to remove them from the field. Obviously, you know, there's evidence that they're investigating. And boy, that's the cardinal sin of baseball is to get involved with gambling. And I know there's been a lot of criticism of, you know, the partnerships that the league has with betting partners and whatnot. But, you know, the Supreme Court made a decision in 2018 that really changed the whole landscape of sports gambling with or without the league's participation. You're going to have these, you know, apps aplenty and micro bets, and baseball more than any other sport lends itself to those micro bets. You know, you can bet on every pitch if you want. So it's pretty ugly, and the players are very well educated on, you know, what to do, what not to do. And, you know, it's unfortunate that it got to this point with these guys where, you know, to even be removed from the field for the investigation is obviously not a good look.
Do you think the leagues, because there's legislation in Jersey now, do you think the leagues could put pressure on their partners at the gaming firms, although they're not partners with everybody, but to get rid of the micro bets?
I don't know, because like you just said, in some sense, the cat's out of the bag. I mean, in some sense, the gambling companies have seen the opportunity that exists here, the marketplace that exists, you know, for this. I was at a game a few weeks ago, and someone just stood up cheering at a very random spot. And I was like, what? Did I miss something? And I realized, oh, it's probably some kind of silly bet that I don't understand. you know, it's just out there. And so, yeah, like you said, I mean, they could maybe lean on their partners. I don't know, but it doesn't mean there's some other company out there that'll take that bet on, you know. But I would also say that, look, the fact that we know about this stuff is a positive in light of, you know, it's an awful situation, but everything is on the books now. I mean, let's not kid ourselves into thinking that, maybe not micro bets, but let's not kid ourselves into thinking that there wasn't, you know, gambling on sports and baseball in particular going on prior to the 2018 Supreme Court ruling. Of course it was, you know, off the books. And, you know, having this stuff on the books, having this stuff, you know, with a paper trail, for lack of a better term, even though it's not paper, it's an app, but is how these guys got caught, is how these situations raised red flags where, hey, that's a lot of bets on a first pitch of a, you know, of a whatever inning it happened to be, you know, that caught people's eyes.
And those so bets are all in Ohio, New York, and New Jersey.
Yeah. So those, I mean, the system worked in that regard. So, I mean, that's a good thing that comes out of this, is at least we know that system is working.
Anthony, what value might Carlos Santana have to some team in the next 4 hours and 43 minutes?
I don't know. I think the value is just, you know, I don't know. It's not high. It's just more about, from the Guardians' perspective, it's just more about freeing up at bats for others at this point. Yeah, it's just kind of where we're at. It is a market light on bats, and people, you know, certain teams, certain clubhouses value veteran presence more than others. But the cold, hard analytical perspective, no, not a high amount of trade value there.
All right. So if they trade Kwan, is that thrown in the towel in the season? Is that, you got to go back to your clubhouse tomorrow and say, all right, well, let's just get through this. They're a young group that, you know, and as Kwan said, Kwan said he wanted to play here, right? You know, and so it's like, I guess if Kwan's gone, you're just saying, all right, we're looking at next year.
You might be saying you're looking at 2027, to be honest with you.
That's true too.
Because they're pretty light offensively, and like you said, I mean that's one of their best players. I think the other possibility here, just like I alluded to earlier, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility that you use this opportunity for things to come to a head and say, all right, if this is where you want to be, and you know, can we work out a deal here? It's in season, so that's unusual, but it's not unprecedented. But yeah, is it throwing it? If you trade Stephen Kwan, are you throwing solid for this year? Yeah, and probably, you know, I would think next year too, unless I'm missing something where they have a lot more coming than I realize, or, you know, a lot more spending coming than I realize. But if that was the case, then you wouldn't be trading Stephen Kwan in the first place.
Anthony, thank you. We appreciate you. I know you got a busy day today, and just thank you so much for joining us and giving us the lowdown. And we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thanks, Anthony.
Absolutely, guys.
Could the Class A allegations actually affect the fandom of the Guardians? 216-474-0092. I want to know from you guys. Because we got into it. Actually, it was Owen and Lima who really got into a knockdown dragout. They got into it big time at the beginning of the show. And you know what? There's a lot more passion out there from the listeners on Shedeur Sanders or the Browns or anything else, man. I'm not getting as much on the Guardians. I think that's a scary thing. I think there's been a malaise over these last several months, not just with the season kind of going flopping and twitching, but the non-moves in the offseason, the possibilities of trading away household names. I mean, Shane Bieber's still a household name. I can understand the reasoning behind that. I've made peace with that even last year before the injury happened so early in the season. Stephen Kwan having technically two years left to arbitration, a year and a half left to arbitration. I think that rubs people the wrong way big time. People have made arguments for it, for trading him. But I don't know how that helps out your legend in Jose Ramirez. It doesn't. And now we have these allegations here, or this investigation, we should say. And when you have Emmanuel Clase, who's been a high-profile guy for your fan base, I mean, Luis Ortiz, we had just got him, and you thought it was a one-off thing. And you have now Emmanuel Clase. I mean, there's been a lot of theories thrown out there here over the last 18 hours. But now that you have Emmanuel Clase, you know, a lot of people are going, what has happened to this team? And it didn't help last night that Cade Smith got blown up after you're trying to beat the Rockies, a 27-win team coming into last night.
And the guy you traded before the season ends up with three RBIs and, you know, does the damage late. So
yeah, that was tough too.
So here's what I want to know first, because we did get into it. And Owen came after me. I think it was because I sat here and I said, man, my buddies who are all gamblers and gamble on all this stuff, they didn't even seem that outraged. And I don't think it's going to stop them from gambling. And Owen was like, but what about the fans? What about the actual fans? If they feel like the game is compromised, if they feel like a closer, because a closer is very different from just a starting pitcher grounding some balls. Like a closer, you're coming in to leverage situations, game on the line, you get behind one batter, especially in a playoff game, which we don't have any allegations, anything yet about the playoffs last year,
though
he did give up
that we know of.
8 earned runs in 8 innings and was untouchable all season.
Reckless speculation.
I don't know how, honestly, if you found out that stymied an ALCS run or a World Series run.
You want the organization.
Well,
I'll join those guys who stand outside the gate at the end of every season, and we'll be out there for a different reason.
It would be.
It won't be for autographs.
No. I'm not going to go that far for crying out loud. But
if he threw ALCS, absolutely.
He would need security.
He can't be with the organization anymore. That's for damn sure.
Organization.
He can't be in.
You know what you sound like right now? I hate to make it. I hate to make the comparison. Not in our club. He's got to go.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, boys. I know you hate it when I do the Sopranos lines.
That's an understatement.
Save it for the podcast.
So, Owen, I understand if that came out, it's just so early, so we're jumping to wild conclusions. But I don't know. Maybe it's the apathy of the season. Maybe it's that my buddies didn't really think this team was going anywhere.
I think that's what it is.
What pissed me off was you said all that, and I don't think you took into account Joe Q fan who goes more than you do right now, right? And uses this as a thing that I bond with my children over and that. And then you called me delusional, and that pissed me off, too. But at the end of the day, I guess you were right, Anthony, because how many people have called in about it? It's been almost 3 hours now since we started the show. It's been 2 hours since we had that fight, and I thought, well, they're going to show up. These guys are going to show up and back me up. The real Guardians fans will be here to tell Anthony and his little degenerate friends that they are out of place and out of context, and apparently I was wrong.
Because I think
apparently none of you care in Cleveland.
But it is almost the same. Like, when we get to December last year, let's call it what it is. It was dead. It was dead. Dead on the phones, dead on social media, dead on the air for a lot of people because the Browns were DOA. So people didn't care. And that type of apathy is scary to any fan, to any owner in professional sports. And I think a lot of people have just gone, what's the next thing that you guys are going to do? Which the Guardians have been the responsible franchise in the city for the last 25 years, if you could say anything for them. They've been the responsible ones. So when you have this, there's a lot of people saying some things who I think have misdirected their anger. As of right now, we could find out more, but...
Well, towards the manager and towards the organization.
Yes.
I will say, Zach Meisel, in his story for The Athletic, he does say not only did the team know that the rumors were starting to float around or whatever, but then they used him. They used him or put him in the bullpen.
They haven't known for a month. This was the weekend, right?
Yeah, so it did open up the question, like, why would you use him? Would you talk to him? Would you talk to his agent? Like, those are the questions I would ask. Like, I do want to know without, like, contaminating his headspace, because... Would you pitch differently if all of a sudden you knew you were being investigated?
Well, if he doesn't know that he's being investigated, I don't know that I'd run him out there, because what if he does it again?
Other problem, right?
One on the first game Saturday, and then they end up winning, but it was a 6-4 game or 8-6. It was a two-run game, right?
Are you asking allegedly throw it in the dirt on purpose? Well,
if this is obvious, we have no clue what they're actually investigating, right. But the Twitter sleuths have... went out and put up the videos, and it's been him throwing balls into the dirt, 4 feet in front of the home plate.
Yeah.
So no, those are pretty egregious things. And if he doesn't know that he's being investigated for that, and we're using him in a leverage situation, and now we know.
Could he help blow another game?
Is he blowing another game when we're actually in a race right now? They're actually in the race after they bounce back from the 10-game losing streak.
That's why it's hard for the organization right now, because they're clearly unable to say much at all.
Yeah.
But me as a fan, you as a fan, like we just had in this setting over the last minute, we had 7 more questions haven't been asked or addressed or allowed to ask.
There's another question out there that a lot of people are saying that, do you want to address it on the air? About would be the only reason you would actually do anything like this, and you would say, okay,
if you were
I can
him
understand
and,
it.
And he was owed $6 million next year, why would he jeopardize
that? No. Oh, yeah, yeah. The only valid reason you would see that is...
You would wonder who else is he involved with, and...
Being influenced by someone that's not in Cleveland.
Guys, we've all seen organized crime shows and movies over the years, and it would make sense. Like, if you were worried about your family,
Finally bring up Goodfellas, and I won't kill you for it, because that was part of the plot of it, right?
Because you could look at him, and because, we talked about on the phone yesterday, and we were going, you don't see this in other sports. It's like, if it happened, like if they said, hey, Patrick Mahomes has to do this, that, and the other, there's going to be serious problems. Okay, Patrick Mahomes is one of the major celebrities of professional sports. You would immediately call the FBI, and you would immediately snuff that out. But when you have guys who are from the Dominican Republic who are not...
Emmanuel, offseason here.
No.
They're going back, right?
Emmanuel Clase is an all-star, but these aren't necessarily household names. And you're looking at them going, hey, I'm not asking you to blow the game. I'm telling you to throw the first ball in the dirt. There's a difference there. And you... As sick as it is, if your family was in any sort of a troublesome situation with these type of people, you'd have to do what you have to do. Now, again, his family may be back in another country. Luis Ortiz's family, this is all, this things that we wonder about. Okay, well, you could put it under investigation. just because you're under investigation. See, that's why I didn't like the today. It was a slip up. He accidentally said suspended yesterday. It's like, well, wait a minute. Let's get this figured out here. Because that would be a legitimate, as sick as it is, would be a legitimate reason. It's weird because you don't hope that's the case because you don't want people's families to be in danger here. But at the same time, if they're found to be egregious errors on purpose, well, then we have a problem within the organization and these guys might have to go. Because how on earth, I mean, let's be serious. If these guys are found guilty by a Major League Baseball investigation, you're the Cleveland Guard. You cannot run these guys out in front of your own fans.
Well, so we are at the level.
You cannot put them out there in front of your own fans again.
I'm trying to classify this the right way. I don't think, even though they're two pitchers, they happen, their lockers are right next to each other. Zach Meisel had more, you know, reporting on this that they put plenty of hobbies together. They talked about, you know, I think raising chickens or whatever. Okay, the two of them both are from the same place, right? They're from the same place. So is this right now a scandal or is it two loan operators, two, you know,
rogues.
Yeah, two guys going out on their own. Is it just right now an incident? It's not the level of scandal. When it becomes a scandal is, oh, this guy knew or this clubhouse attendant
exactly.
knew or whatever.
How long? It's not a scandal yet. It's two guys who may have been acting improperly within the game. It's if we do find out they knew for a while, if we do find out that other people may have been involved in it, which according to Major League Baseball, nobody else is. So right now it's an incident, but then it would get to a scandal level if we found out other people.
So with
or
Ortiz,
were to move higher up, for God's sakes.
With you don't Ortiz, go that and this is what this is the good side of the leagues being in bed with the gaming companies. The good side of this is, man, so much more is being caught that never would have gotten caught before.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it because they can see the bets. They can see where the bets come in. And that's triggering. The anomalies are triggering investigations. That's what happened with the first one. And it was two pitches for Ortiz, right?
Right.
There were two pitches. And that's it. The fact that two pitches could trigger a big-time investigation, and then they could bring baseball in, and they could sideline him immediately. Like, that to me is showing that the system can work. That doesn't mean it's foolproof, but it does show that the system can work. I want to know so much more in this case about what triggered it here, because that will determine, I think, how hard the fans are going to be on the organization and the manager when all is said and done.
Well, I want to know what the fans think. Could this alleged possible scandal incident, could it actually affect your Guardians fandom? 216-474-0092, especially if you're a person like Owen who's paying the $50 a month, if you're a season ticket holder or anything of that nature. Could that actually affect your fandom depending on the outcome over the next month?